We've looked the last couple of weeks at the things that Satan used to tempt Jesus, and we're going to finish that this morning with the third of those things. We talked about each week, we've kind of done a little bit of a review, reminding ourselves of the basic three ways that Satan tempts: through the lust of the eyes, the lust of the flesh, and the pride of life. We've kind of done them a little out of that order, though, because we talked about the lust of the flesh first, and then the pride of life, and now we're back to the lust of the eyes. And so we want to get into this idea, and of course we won't just be in Matthew 4, but we will be looking at Matthew chapter 4, verses 8 through 10. But we want to learn some things about our eyes. Sometimes we don't think too much about our eyes. We're glad they're there until we start losing our vision and need glasses, or until we can't see clearly. And we don't think about them much. You know, it is interesting, isn't it, the things we do. We brush our teeth to take care of our teeth, to keep them from falling out. And we do various different things for various parts of our bodies. But we just kind of expect our eyes to just work like they're supposed to. And until they don't work like they're supposed to, we're happy with them. But we want to consider looking at what you're looking at. Have you ever seen something that you didn't even know existed before, but as soon as you saw it, you suddenly knew you just couldn't live without it? How many times has that happened to us, that we didn't even know such a thing existed, but when we saw it, oh, I got to have that. I got to get that right now. Of course, in sales, they call that an impulse buy, but that's kind of part of the purpose of those things. They put them out there so you'll see them because they're new and you didn't know they were there before, and somebody developed these things. Over the years, there have been thousands and thousands of these type things. Some of those things that we bought thinking, oh, I've got to have one of those, wound up in a garage sale a few years later. Some of them are still in attics or basements or closets collecting dust. Some of them actually were useful things. But the fact of the matter is, if we had never seen them and never known we needed them, our lives wouldn't have really been all that bad. But because we saw them, we thought suddenly we had to. John Lehrer said, society drives people crazy with lust and calls it advertising. And that is the case. There have been studies done that showed how much television you watch directly relates to how much money you spend at the store. Well, why is that? Because they show you commercials, advertisements. And the more advertisements they can show you by you watching more television, you see more and more commercials, you want more and more things. We talked about the lust of the flesh. The lust of the flesh is a natural thing. Right now, my tummy's kind of rumbling. Yours may be too. It's saying it's getting close to time to feed me. That's a fleshly desire. The body just naturally wants something to eat. Well, the lust of the eyes, though, many times are not those things that are natural. We talked about they're things that if you didn't see it, you wouldn't know you wanted it. Your body didn't just cry out for it like it would for oxygen if you were held with your head under the water. It's not just a natural desire. It's something that pushes itself in upon you that wouldn't have been there otherwise. And so how often the lust of the eyes gets us into trouble. In 2 Corinthians 4:18, Paul says, while we do not look at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporary, but the things which are not seen are eternal. So we need to ask ourselves, what are you looking at? What am I looking at? What are my eyes seeing that's going to affect the way that I live my life? And we want to look at a few things along the line. So we're going to start with what we are looking at, each of these points. So we only have 4 points, but I can surely fill 6 or 7 hours with those 4 points, no problem. What we are looking at, first of all, influences our desires. They don't doubt me at all. They believe I can do it. If somebody doesn't shoot me first, you know, that's the thing. Might gun me down if I go over an hour, that's for sure. But what we are looking at influences our desires. And we've talked about that a little bit in the introduction. The more we look at something, the more we want the thing that we've seen. seeing is the beginning of many desires. Things that we didn't know we wanted until we looked and looked. And the story is told of the fellow who every day drove past this expensive Lamborghini and looked at it. And the first time he said, wow, that's quite a car. The next day he drove past again. He said, wow, that really is something. The next day he stopped and took a closer look. The next day he stopped and took a look. And he kept looking at that car and looking at that car. And he kept wanting that car more and more. And he couldn't afford it. So eventually he stole it because he kept looking at it. That might seem a little extreme, but you know, the same thing has happened with many men or women in respect to someone who's not their spouse. They kept looking and looking and looking until they finally got somebody that wasn't theirs to have. They stole somebody else's husband or wife. That happens all the time. And we think with the car, well, that's ridiculous. Just looking at a car wouldn't make you want to steal it. If you look at it with desire long enough, it certainly can. As we think about the seeing things being the beginning of desires, how many of you, I don't want to date you too much or show your age too much, but how many of you remember the fuss about subliminal messages at the movie theaters, at the drive-ins and things? They would flash those pictures of the popcorn and the Coca-Cola up there faster than you could consciously recognize that it was being done. It happened so quick that you didn't even realize you'd seen it, but you did see it. And then pretty soon you'd be saying, you know, I'd really like some popcorn. You know, a Coke would be great. How about a candy bar? And I'm going to have to go to the concession stand. They did. That worked. It worked. I thought about getting a little video of some subliminal message and putting up here to have y'all all give me $10 as you walked out the door and see how well that would work. But, you know, there's a trick to that when you see something time and time again, and you see it and it imprints on you, and you start wanting it. You start wanting to do that thing. You start wanting to have that thing. And that's the way those subliminal messages worked, and that's why they've been outlawed. Because it was tricking people, deceptively getting people to buy things that really they didn't even necessarily want. But because that message was flashing up there so fast, you know, buy a Coke and then a picture of the Coke. You know, buy a Coke, picture of the Coke. And a lot of people succumbed to that and they'd go and buy the Coke. Even though they didn't even like Coke, they'd rather had a Pepsi. But, you know, they'd go buy the Coke because that's the one that kept flashing up there to them. So we've got to think about how much it influences our desires. In Joshua chapter 7, do you remember the story of Achan? They went to Jericho and they defeated it, but somebody took some stuff they weren't supposed to. Remember, they were supposed to destroy everything from the city of Jericho. They weren't supposed to keep any of the spoils for themselves, but Achan did. And it's interesting, when Joshua finally confronts Achan about it and he says, make a confession about what you've done. Achan answered, and here's what he said, I've sinned against the Lord because I've done this and this. In verse 21 of Joshua chapter 7, he says, when I saw among the spoils a fancy Babylonian garment and 200 shekels of silver and a wedge of gold of 50 shekels weight, then I coveted them and then I took them. He didn't even know he wanted that gold and silver and that fancy garment of clothing until he saw them. We've got to beware of what we're looking at, because it affects our desires. It influences what we want. Matthew chapter 4 and verse 8, that's exactly what Satan did to Jesus. He takes him up on a high mountain and shows him, you want to talk about, we need to not underestimate Satan. Think about the power that he has. Think about the things that he can do. It says that he showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their splendor, their glory, their beauty. All of them. Luke tells us that he did it in an instant. Satan is a supernatural being. He's beyond our powers and our abilities. He is supernatural. Now, he's, in the sense God created him, he's a created being. He's not on a level with God by any means. But he is on a level above us as far as his abilities and the things that he can do. He could take Jesus and show Jesus all the nations of the world in an instant of time, just in a very brief period of time. And why did he show him those things? He wanted to influence Jesus' desire for those things. Now, didn't Jesus already desire the world? Yes, Jesus desired to save the world and to redeem the world and give it back to his Father. But what does Satan do? Satan shows him the world, and Satan wants Jesus to see the world in a different way. What Satan wants to do is the thing that we see next is what we're looking at influences our worldview, and Satan wants to influence Jesus' worldview. So as we look at this and think about this, we need to realize the way we look at people and things affects the way we live our lives every day. And people live differently based on what their worldview is. In 1 Samuel 16:7, the Lord said to Samuel, "Don't look on his countenance or the height of his stature. I've refused him, for the Lord does not see as man sees. Man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart." You see, which person Samuel would have chosen as king versus which one God said, "This is the one I've chosen as king," was very different because they were looking at those individuals differently. How we look at people affects how we interact with them. We talked last week on our Sunday night lesson about evangelism with John chapter 4 and the woman at the well. That affects things. How you look at somebody. Jesus could have looked at her as just some old woman from Samaria that he didn't want anything to do with, or he could look at her as a lost soul that needed the gospel. And which way he looked at her was going to affect his interaction with her, wasn't it? Every time we interact with someone, it's affected by how we're viewing those individuals. In Philippians 2 and verse 4, the Bible says, "Do not look every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others." In other words, don't be just worried about your own stuff, worry about other people's things. But what are you looking at? Are you looking at how you can get more all the time and not concerned about your neighbor, not concerned about your fellow Christian? Or are you going to look at how you can help your fellow Christian, your fellow man, your neighbor? Which one of those are you doing? Because that's going to affect the way you live your life. It's going to affect how you view the accumulation of wealth. There are a lot of things that are affected by what we're looking at. Proverbs chapter 27 and verse 20. Solomon says, "Hell and destruction are never full, so the eyes of man are never satisfied." Have you ever found that to be the case? The story is told, and I may have actually put it in the little paper, but the story is told of a man who had some servants. And he was standing outside the kitchen. He heard the kitchen servants talking one day. And he heard one of them say, "Oh, I would be so happy if I just had $50. I'm just in such dire straits right now. If I just had $50, it would make all the difference in the world to me. I would be so content and so happy." Now, this rich man wanted to help the servant out. Wanted to see somebody be truly happy. And so he got $50. Out of his wallet and brought it in, and he said, "Look, you've been doing such a good job, here's $50. And thank you. He walked back out the door and then stayed outside the door just for a minute to hear what happened. After a minute or two, when they thought he was out of earshot, the servant said, "Oh, I wish I'd asked for $100. We seem to never be satisfied. Our eyes, no matter how much we see, we still want to see more. The devil knows this. The devil uses this against us and constantly puts things in front of our eyes so that we will want them. He understands what he's doing. He's had thousands of years of experience getting people, and this is one of his tricks that he uses. In John chapter 4 and verse 35, Jesus said, "Say not, there are 4 months to the harvest, but I say to you, lift up your eyes and look on the fields, they are already white to harvest." See, Jesus was looking at things with a different way that the disciples were looking. Now, he wasn't talking about the physical harvest. He was talking about, yeah, it's 4 months to the harvest, but look, I'm going to tell you, there's a harvest right now. He was looking at the people coming up from Samaria there. And he told his disciples, look, it's ripe to harvest right now. He was looking at things with different eyes than they were. He was looking at things in a different way. And Satan, in Matthew 4 verses 8 and 9, he wants Jesus to look at the world the way that Satan looks at the world. He wants Jesus to consider the world just a pawn in the game, something to be won, something to be taken and used and abused. But Jesus doesn't fall for that. For one thing, Jesus knew that you can't trust everything you see. You know, we put a lot of trust in our eyes, don't we? They're one thing, you know, we often people would ask, you know, well, would you rather lose your ability to walk or lose your ability to talk or lose your ability to hear or lose your ability to see? And without fail, about 95% of people say, hey, I don't want to lose my ability to see. My eyes are the most important thing. But you know, our eyes play tricks on us, don't they? Now I'm going to try this right here, and I don't know if there are enough of you sitting close enough for this to work or not, but we're going to try it. Who do you see? Randy might see. Randy, who you see?
Albert Einstein.
Albert Einstein. Who y'all see back there in the back? Y'all see Albert Einstein? Everybody sees Albert Einstein? See, I got the picture too big. I should have, well, I have to zoom it out. Well, if you sit far enough back, you'll see Marilyn Monroe. Now, Albert Einstein and Marilyn Monroe, I don't think, looked very much alike. I needed to check that a little better and check the size on it. But, so that one's in here. Now, what about this one? What do you see here? You see that preacher standing there with that baby about to baptize her? That's me and Abigail. Now, y'all know Abigail was just baptized a few months ago, and she's a lot bigger than that. In fact, the fact of the matter is, that's two pictures spliced together. I wasn't even holding her. I cut her out of another picture and put her there. That's kind of like photoshopping pictures. You know, we can't trust what we see. We see things. I saw a picture the other night of a woman standing next to a horse that was on fire. I commented out, she said, that horse isn't on fire. That's just the sun setting back there behind him, and it just looked like he was on fire. But, you know, we see things sometimes. Our eyes play all kinds of tricks on us. We can't trust our eyes. We can't trust them. They just don't give us valid information too many times. And yet, they're the one thing that we do depend on the most. They're the thing that I saw it with my own eyes. Well, what did you see? Sometimes we see things that aren't the accurate thing. Then we want to notice that what we're looking at can tempt us to sin. You know, it's one thing if I walk past the candy aisle and I see the brand new whatever candy, and I think, oh, I never tried that. I want to try one of those, and I buy that and have that little candy bar or whatever. That's one thing. But often, what we see, what we look at, actually leads us into sin. It tempts us to the point that we sin. It's not just a matter of getting up from the movie theater and going buying some popcorn. It's a matter of actually breaking God's laws that we sometimes get involved with. Sometimes by indulgence. In Ecclesiastes 2, 4 through 11, the writer here tells us about all the things he did. Made great works, built houses, planted vineyards, and on. I'm not going to read all of those verses. But he built all these things, got all these things, bought all these things, gathered all these things, got servants of all these things. And finally, it says in verse 10, whatever my eyes desired, I didn't keep it from them. Now what do we know about Solomon? He had 1,000 women, because whatever his eyes desired, he didn't keep it from them. He saw a pretty woman, well, he just said, hey, I'm going to get that one for my next wife. Saw another pretty woman, well, I'm going to get that one too. Whatever he saw and he wanted it, he just got it. Did that make Solomon happy? Did it make him godly? No, absolutely not. Giving yourself everything your eyes desire will not make you happy. It will not make you spiritual. It will not make you godly. It just won't. I tell my children all the time when they say, I want this or that, I say, it's good to want things, and it's better not to get them sometimes. Sometimes it's good to deny ourselves and say no. I see something, oh, but I don't need that. That's good for us. It's good for our character to say no to ourselves sometimes. But we live in a self-indulgent society where you got to watch out for number one and give yourself everything that you ever wanted. And that's not healthy for us spiritually. Probably not healthy for us physically either. You hear about some of these people that are 700 or 800 pounds and can't even get up out of the bed, and people keep bringing them food because they want it. That's not healthy for them. And then sometimes they tempt us by covetousness. Proverbs 6, 20 through 29, Solomon warns his son about these dangers. He warns him particularly of wanting a strange woman, a woman that's not his. He says, beware of that. Don't fall for that. In verse 27, he warns him, can a man take fire in his bosom and his clothes not be burned? Can one go upon hot coals and his feet not be burned? So is he that goes into his neighbor's wife. Whoever touches her will not be innocent. If you start looking for things that aren't yours and you start wanting those things that aren't yours, it's going to get you into trouble. And of course, sometimes they tempt us to sin by adultery. How many people get involved in adultery? 2 Peter 2:14 says, having eyes full of adultery. Eyes full of adultery. That's where Jesus said the adultery starts, isn't it? With the eyes. Starts with that. Then sometimes they get us by shortcutting God's will. And that's what Satan was trying to do. Jesus had every right to the nations of the world. He had done everything that he should have done. He created them. He gave them life. He gave them law. He had every right to have them. But the problem was, Satan was trying to get Jesus to take a shortcut. I've often heard, and probably it's true, there's no shortcut to any place worth going. Take that shortcut. Spiritually speaking, I know that's true. It may not always be true of the actual roads on the highways. But in spiritual terms, if you take a shortcut, it's not going to benefit you. It's going to be a problem to you, in fact. In Matthew 4, 9, and 10, we see Satan trying to tempt him. Here, you can have it all. Isn't that what Jesus came for? Jesus came to get the world, to save the world. That's what he was here for. And Satan said, I'll give it to you right now if you'll bow down and worship me. Take the shortcut. Take the easy way out. You don't have to go through the cross. Don't have to do all, you don't have to die and suffer all that pain and suffering and all that rejection. Just bow down to me and I'll give it to you. Wouldn't it be nice to get... Don't you think that was tempting to Jesus? Of course it was. If it wasn't tempting, Satan wouldn't have done it. You say Satan doesn't go out of his way to try to present us with something that he knows we're not interested in. He gets us the things that we are tempted by and puts them in front of us. That's why we're tempted by different things, and so we face different difficulties. Satan's not going to tempt two different people who have totally different interests and desires with the same thing. But Satan was just trying to get Jesus to take that shortcut. And see, we realize that these actually were things that Satan could have given Jesus as well. Because if they weren't, there would have been no point in him offering them. Why would you offer something if you can't have the power to give? Well, Satan might do that to us. He might tempt us with that. But Jesus would see through that. Jesus' answer to that would have been, you can't give me all these nations of the world. But that wasn't Jesus' response, was it? Jesus' response was, you're only supposed to worship God. But Satan used seeing all of the nation, all those people out there. I'll give them all to you. But Jesus knew that if he did do what Satan wanted, and he received all the nations from Satan, like Satan was promising, even if that part worked out, he wouldn't be able to give them to God. He wouldn't be able to give them to his Father because he himself would then be under Satan's power. And so he knew that wasn't going to work out the way that Satan was tempting him for it to work out. But then we want to notice the final thing is that what we're looking at can be sinful in itself. Sometimes we don't admit that to ourselves. We say, well, I can look at this, I can watch this, I can see... We need to realize there are some things that as Christians, our eyes should not be looking at. Now, I know there are some things, we're going to see some things that we didn't want to see in life. That's just going to happen sometimes. It's going to be right there in front of our face and we don't have any choice, you know, except to turn away. But the fact of the matter is, so many times we say, well, I can handle it. I can look at this or that or the other thing. Can you really? How much is it influencing you in these other areas, for one thing, that many times we don't even realize it is? Even though it's not a subliminal message, repeatedly viewing something, seeing something over and over again, it gets to us, whether we like to admit it or not. Worldliness is a desire to enjoy the beauty of this world. And there's nothing wrong with that part of enjoying the beauty of this world, but without respect for its creator. It's kind of like those in Romans that began to worship the creation rather than the Creator. We've got to watch out for that. That's something that we need to consider, is that danger that we try to enjoy the beauty of this world without respecting the Creator who created it. We've missed the boat. In Genesis chapter 19, verses 17 and 26, remember Lot in Sodom and Gomorrah, and the angels bring him out and say, flee to the mountains. Don't look behind you. Don't look back. What did Lot's wife do? We're admonished in the New Testament to remember Lot's wife. We don't even know her name, but we're supposed to remember her because she did the very thing they said. They said, don't look back. And she looked back and she was turned to a pillar of salt. Now, I firmly believe there was more in her looking back than just glancing back to watch the things happen. She was looking back. She was missing what was back there, what she was leaving behind. She was regretting what she was leaving behind. And that was part of what was in that look, that desire. She was looking back with some desire to have that again. And that's what cost her her life. Just that look and the emotions and thoughts that were associated with it cost her her life. Then in Matthew chapter 5, verses 28 and 29, Jesus, we mentioned earlier about the adultery, he said, if a man looks at a woman with lustful intent, the ESV says, the King James says, if he looks at her, to lust after her. But if that's what he's looking at, if he's looking at her in that way, he's looking at her sexually instead of purely. Instead of looking at her as a sister, as a fellow child of God, whether it be a child of God in the church or whether it be a child of God by creation, which all of us are, whether we're Christian or not, Christians are all children of God by creation. But how do we look at other people? And see, Jesus talks about this. The idea, and one of the things with this lust of the eyes that's running rampant in our society is pornography. It's such a huge problem. And again, there are so many people, men especially, who say they're Christians, but they're still struggling with looking at those things they ought not be looking at. Well, I can handle it. You can't handle it. You're sinning by looking at a woman lustfully. Jesus said that was like committing adultery already in your heart. You see, in Matthew chapter 4, Jesus was prepared by a lifetime of controlling his gazes and glances, by a lifetime of keeping his eyes under the control of his spirit and mind, not allowing them to dictate how he lived his life, but instead dictating to them what they looked at. What about us? What are we looking at? What are you looking at? How are you looking at it? Why are you looking at it? With what intent in your heart are you looking at it? Are you looking at the unseen things that lead us to eternal life? Those things that will last forever? Or are our eyes so focused on worldly things that we can't see the spiritual thing? What we look at, how we use our eyes, not just actually physically, but in a spiritual sense, what we're looking at. Colossians says, set your affections on things above. It's not just what we see with our eyes, but it's what we love. That's why we chose that little picture with the little heart there. What are we desiring? What are we loving to look at? Good, pure, uplifting, encouraging, spiritually edifying things? Or are we looking at things that will degrade and destroy us spiritually, that will cause sin to enter our life, that will cause us to look at the world Satan's way instead of God's way? Do you have a need to respond to God's invitation this morning, either because you've never obeyed Him, you've never looked at your own sinful life and said, you know, I need to look to the cross? You can do that this morning, believing in Him, repenting of your sins, being buried with Him in baptism after confessing Christ as the Son of the living God. If you hear and you are a Christian, but perhaps you've allowed your sight to be taken off of Jesus, perhaps you've turned your eyes away and you've started looking at the nations around you, like the Israelites did when they came into Canaan, start wanting to be like everybody else. Remember, God wants us to be a peculiar people. He wants us to be different. Let's set our eyes back on Him. If you need to respond, please do so as we stand and as we sing.